Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about the true history of Dole, banana plantations, chemical pesticides, and human suffering. Curcumin is the key to unlocking cancer's epigenetic code. Garlic sprouted for 5 days has important antioxidant potential. Can you really die of a broken heart? That and a lot more on health and healing. Then we have an extended amount today on the environment, not the least of which will be half of Britain to be opened up to fracking. I've been to the British countryside more than 20 times. It is one of the most beautiful places on earth, in my opinion. I love going there. It's very de-stressing, peaceful. You see wonderful rolling hills. Well, that's about to change. Now, I know from our Google Analytics that we have about 23,000 people listening in the United Kingdom to this program. We have 166 countries where people listen. And so for all of you in Great Britain, my suggestion is that you begin to connect with grassroots groups to challenge gas hydrofracking. We have articles on it, there are films on it, good documentaries, and do all that you can to try to stop it. Because here's the other side of it. If you don't, then you could end up like a new University of Colorado Boulder study. Scientists linked 10,800-foot deep fracking wastewater wells with more than 200 earthquakes in Colorado, up in the High Sierra. So that's why you should be against that. But also today, a very comprehensive, in-depth analysis of climate change caused by covert weather weapons. And this actually is in the NASA documents. And we can thank Chemtrails Planet for sharing this information. It's all fully documented. So I'll give you an understanding that we should do more than focus upon CO2 emissions as causing climate change. We should not refuse to acknowledge the military has been actively engaged in climate warming weapons technologies for more than 20 years. We will not deal in hearsay. We will deal in specific documents, dates, and all of that is completely avoided by the loop of the network news. Also today, I'm going to give some predictions. I believe that based upon all the evidence that I have at this moment, that we are in multiple bubbles, bond bubbles, stock bubbles, corporate real estate bubbles, and or commercial real estate bubbles, and also they're trying to create another bubble in the subprime real estate market. These are going to start to collapse. I'll share the latest on why you should get out of debt and put yourself in a liquid position. Also, if you remember, I said over 2 years ago that there is no way in the world that gold and silver would remain where they were. Gold right now should be at about $3,000 to $4,000 an ounce. Silver should be at $50 to $60 an ounce. Why isn't it? Well, might have to do with a lawsuit that's been filed against the Deutsche Bank, HSBC, and the Bank of Nova Scotia for manipulating the daily benchmark price. They've been controlling it. We told you about it. Now the lawsuits are proving it. Also, billionaire warns that Yellen, by the way, is head of the Federal Reserve Bank, took Ben Bernanke's place, quote, collapse will be unlike any other, meaning it's going to be bad. And then also from Andrea Damon, the financial bubble economy. So I'm going to give you the best shot I can at how to see what's coming at us and how to get out of harm's way. Let's begin. From St. George University in London, losing a loved one, of course, can be heartbreaking. But a new study shows that this can be more than just symbolic, as the chances of experiencing a stroke or a heart attack after a partner's death doubles within the first 30 days. Researchers from St. George's University in London have published the results in the Journal of the American Medical Association. They note that sometimes grief can lead to extra physical stress and can also make people lose interest or forget to take their medications. And then it's called the bereavement risk factor. And also I would add in this from my own study that anytime you're under stress, you increase your cortisol levels substantially. And that is really risky. And also, when a partner dies and we're not prepared for it, if it's an accident or heart attack or stroke, we feel such loss if we're associated with that person that we no longer have the desire or will to live. And that's one of the things they found also. So my suggestion is if you know that there's someone dying, that you get the kind of counseling for end-of-life emotional impact. We're all going to grieve when someone close to us or a pet close to us passes. But we also have to prepare ourselves as best we can and get some counseling and support so we can weather that. Sprouting is one of the most single healthy things you can do, eating sprouts and sprouting. There are dozens of different seeds that you can sprout, everything from onion and garlic and daikon and radishes to the most common ones like alfalfa and sunflower. But garlic is rarely sprouted. This is from Medical News Today. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. Quote, sprouted garlic, meaning old garlic bulbs with bright green shoots emerging from the cloves, is considered to be past its prime and usually ends up in the garbage bin. But scientists in this report show that this type of garlic has even more heart-healthy antioxidant activity than its fresher counterparts. And Dr. Kim and colleagues note that people who have used garlic for medicinal purposes for thousands of years, and today people still celebrate its healthy benefits, eating garlic or taking garlic supplements is touted as a natural way to reduce cholesterol levels, reduce blood pressure, reduce heart disease risk. By the way, it also helps reduce parasites. It even may boost the immune system, and it can fight cancer. And sprouted garlic has received very little attention. Here's why. When seedlings grow into green plants, they make many new compounds, including those that protect the young plant against pathogens. And the reasoning is that the same thing might be happening when green shoots grow from old heads of garlic. Now, other studies have shown that sprouted beans and grains have increased antioxidant activity. So the team set out to see if the same is true of garlic, and they found that garlic sprouted for 5 days had higher antioxidant levels than fresher, younger bulbs, and it had different metabolites, suggesting that it makes different substances. So that's all good. So now we can add that sprouted garlic in there to what we should be using. One of the single most studied nutrients in the world is curcumin. And I might mention, turmeric, from which cumin is made, is probably one of the most commonly used spices because it is used daily by over 1.3 billion people living in India, plus it's used in Indonesia, plus it's used in China. So you probably have 4 to 5 billion people in the world using the spice on a regular basis. We don't use it in the United States. A Dr. Goel, Director of Epigenetics and Cancer Prevention at the Gastrointestinal Research Center at Baylor University Medical School in Dallas, is looking at how curcumin plays a role in unlocking the cancer epigenetic code. And a study published in the journal Gastroenterology entitled Novel Evidence of Curcumin-Induced DNA Methylation Changes in Colon Cancer Cells looked at epigenetic expression in colon cancer cells and the influence of curcumin. Quote, it was a very technical study, but in essence, we looked at a process in the body called methylation. and how that process silences certain genes that are designed to suppress tumors. Curcumin was able to reawaken the sleeping genes and reignite the body's own tumor suppression activity. This process keeps the cancer's tumor from growing and spreading and is vitally important. That we used only colon cancer cells in the study, we suspect this is one mechanism of action for cancer suppression, many other types of cancer as well. It is exciting new research and holds great promise for human health as the science continues to unfold. Okay, in lay language, what does this mean? It means that if you were to take curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, curcumin, let's say 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day, you would be doing your body a service because it's helping you prevent cancer. Now, if you have cancer anywhere in the body, I would up that substantially because it's a very important part of any cancer protocol. Flax meal. It's probably one of America's most important new health items. Here's an article from the Chattanooga Times. Quote, flaxseed has three primary benefits, fiber, omega-3 fatty acids, and lignans, plant chemicals that are being investigated for their cancer-fighting potential. Quote, they contain plant estrogens that act the same way as a breast cancer drug called tamoxifen, which works against the real estrogen that can prompt certain cancers to grow. It's still under investigation, but some studies show that lignans reduce the onset of mammary tumors in lab animals. In a Swedish study that was done at the Division of Oncology at the Linköping University in Sweden said, quote, a diet high in phytoestrogens, such as flaxseed, may affect breast cancer progression in a similar fashion as an anti-estrogen tamoxifen, end quote. I found another study at the Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University, and it showed that flaxseed contains the highest number of lignans of any plant-based food product. So, the key is get your flaxseed and help prevent cancer. Now, I don't suggest you eat the flaxseed because 90%, I believe, is going to come right out of your body. Have the flax meal, which is the ground-up flax seed. Therefore, you're getting the fiber, the omega-3 fatty acids, and the lignans, lig, L-I-G, nans, N-E-N-S, lignans. And it can help tremendously. This is from the AMA, the American Medical Association. And this was published by Bruce Jamson of the Chicago Tribune. Now, why is that significant? Because this is mainstream journalism and mainstream medicine. Quote, nearly one in five medical claims processed inaccurately. Quote, health insurance companies are inaccurately processing nearly one in five medical claims, slowing payments to doctors and adding bureaucratic headaches to patients, the American Medical Association said this morning. In its annual report card on the health insurance industry released during the group's annual House of Delegates meeting, the AMA said commercial health insurance companies have an error rate of 19.3%. That's up 2% from last year. Improving claims processing could save patients money and improve medical care by reducing hassles physicians have when they are forced to haggle with health plans over payments or other issues. Quote, a 20% error rate among health insurers represents an intolerable level of inefficiency that weighs $17 billion annually. That's according to Dr. Barbara McKinney of the AMA board member and medical oncologist of New Mexico. All right, I look at this a little differently. I look at it from this perspective. We did a report 5 years ago. It took 3 years to do the report. There were five MDs and PhDs who worked on it. Most were academics. Therefore, they had deep research skills and hold very high standards in scholarship. And one was an oncologist, so that person an Italian oncologist research scientist from Italy, did the research on cancer. Another neurologist did it in neurology, the brain, etc. Anyhow, the report finally came out. It was called Death by Medicine. And in it, we showed that the number one cause of death and injury every year for the past 20 years in the United States had been American medicine itself. Now, that is not in and of itself a condemnation. It's merely information. Because we have about 20% of American medicine that is exemplary. It saves lives. We are terrific at emergency medicine, at sewing back a limb, helping with a broken jaw, taking a bullet out of someone's abdomen. The things that really can cause a person to die, we're good at preventing. Where we fail with the 80% of medicine is in chronic care, arthritis, the common cold, pregnancy. Not that that is a disease, but even the complications of trying to make it a disease because medicine has intentionally pathologized pregnancy so it can control it, hence the ban on midwifery, for example, or home birth. Also in diabetes and just inflammation, we fail miserably. And that's where people are over-medicated, over-diagnosed, and in the treatment being way over-treated, they end up dying or becoming injured. You would think that if more people died each year from medical errors than from heart disease or stroke or cancer or diabetes, that would make news. You're talking about anywhere on the low end from about 575,000 to the high end of almost a million people a year dying. Or put it in perspective, over the last 20 years, you would have had anywhere between 6 million to about 8 million Americans die who didn't have to. That's medical genocide. Anyhow, the entire report was written up. It was sent out to 7,000 members of the media. Every member of the state legislatures received it. That was over 5,000. Every member of Congress, every governor. Not a single person responded. Not one. All the statistics were there. And so we went ahead and Life Extension published it, and then a whole lot of other websites that published it. And it's been well received. No one has looked at it. And why? And that is a fear of what will happen if they challenge it, and then it opens up a dialogue or debate. And if that happens, then there's a whole lot of trouble. Because what then would you say? You would have to say that our medical paradigm is grossly flawed. So let's go back to the AMA report, that they're screwing up with 20% of all the applications. What if we had universal health care, which any reasonable and responsible person would say meets our needs? Now, if you want private health insurance because you feel you can afford it and you want to be able to have the doctor you want, or the procedure went, and you can pay for it, or your private insurance company can pay for it, I have no problem with that. But for everyone who doesn't want that, we want to have a non-profit or charity position where there is no medical malpractice, there is no defensive medicine, you're not going to be given every test in the world, you're not going to be given x-rays when you don't need it, which could cause cancer later. You're not going to be given every kind of medication because it's profitable for the oncologist. The oncologist can buy a drug. Let's say they buy a drug from the pharmaceutical company at $5,000, can turn around and sell it to you for $12,000, and that's their profit. Nowhere else in medicine is a doctor allowed to do that. If they do that anywhere else, they'll lose their license. But for oncology, they lobbied, they got that, and that's why it costs so much for a person to get cancer treatment. So if we had universal health care, then we wouldn't have the number one cause of bankruptcy for 10 years, medical expenses. And then the second 6 years, home foreclosures, but also then right behind it, number two, was medical expenses. We wouldn't have the scene from the movie Sicko where a person in Canada that severed fingers got them all sewn back on at no cost, but in the United States, a guy had to select which finger he wanted sewn back on because he could only afford to have one of them sewn back on. Or seeing the emergency room where the mother had her child rejected because even though she had insurance paid up, it didn't cover that particular emergency and went from hospital to hospital, and finally her daughter died. We have abysmal medicine in the United States, and that's why those who supported Obamacare were doing so based upon misinformation or ideological support, and they were wrong, all of them. It's much like watching the people on MSNBC who come from, many of them come from legitimate social backgrounds where they've cared about issues. But once you become a celebrity on television, you do not get to say what you want, nor do you have the guests on you want. You have to stay within certain guidelines because you're working for a corporation and its sponsors. And if you doubt me, look at the pathetic rationalizations that Chris Hayes was giving when he was defending the network for censoring one of its reporters on her honest reporting about Gaza. We've had no honest reporting on Gaza or the conflict in the American media, the mainstream media, none. And that's because all the money goes to one side, all the lobbying is on one side, and as a result, we do not have reasoned, responsible dialogue to see the nature of the problem and the possibility of different solutions. It's all primal reactions. So the same is true in medicine. Now the arguments about who's covered, what they have to pay, rather than does this stuff work? We're not even asking, does American medicine work? Well, it depends. For 80% of medicine, the answer is no, it will help kill you. It will get you sicker. For 20%, yes, it will save your life. But we don't have that discussion because of the power of the pharmaceutical company, the foundations and the front groups they support, and the highly credentialed MDs that go forward and say vitamins are not necessary, vaccines are safe, you could give a kid 10,000 vaccines and it wouldn't harm him. Why don't you try by giving yourself 10,000 vaccines and see the outcome? But nowhere in the media will that person be challenged by how many tens of millions of dollars they've made off their affiliation with vaccines and their research department paid by pharmaceutical companies making vaccines. We are so compromised on so many levels. But the number one expense in America is not the military-industrial complex. It is not the energy cartel. Put those two together and all the food eaten in America and all the housing in America, and you still haven't gotten up to what is spent each year on medicine. $3.3 trillion. It's the largest single expenditure in the world of any economy on anything. And yet we get the worst possible medicine 80% of the time. We get fraudulent medicine. We get corrupt medicine. We get price fixing, price gouging, toxic drugs, hidden studies, bias in science, federal agencies completely controlled by the pharmaceutical interest. So the next time someone tries to have a discussion with you about Obamacare, it was written by the insurance industry. It was lobbied for by the insurance industry. Why aren't the Democrats talking about this? What are they afraid of? Look at the truth of it. It doesn't work. And as a result, it causes people to die. The interesting part is the more people that are treated, the more people will become injured and die. Why is that statistic not brought up? Go online and read the study for yourself. Watch the documentary, Death by Medicine, and then you understand why this is so important. We have universal health care. We get rid of all of the litigation. We support people who are injured. But we get rid of the high prices, and so nobody can go broke. And then we bring in true holistic intervention into that system so people not just get treated, but they get treated correctly. Because right now, you're being mistreated with statins, with chemotherapy, with blood thinners instead of using natural supplements that will thin the blood without causing bleeding and death. So we need a complete, total overhaul of all of medicine in the United States. Finally, I want to go into, from Catalin Moore of Natural News, the true history of dole and banana plantations and chemical pesticides and human suffering. Let's look at dole's earlier years. American naturalist Dan Koppel relates an often forgotten story surrounding some of dole's initial business dealings in Honduras. In 1903, the town hall in La Ceiba burned down, taking with it marriage, birth, and land records. The destruction of the land records left the officials with no official determination of who owned what land. Joseph Fatico and his company, Standard Fruit, capitalized on this event in two ways. They no longer had to pay plot owners for using their land to grow bananas, and the dole plantations surrounding the village got most of the land in the reshuffle. Fast forward to today, where Dole is now the largest fresh fruit company with revenues of over $7 billion a year. In June of 1989, Mother Jones went down to Costa Rica to get a first-hand account from workers in the small villages of Rio Frio regarding the effect of the toxin DBCP on their lives. Now, DBCP is often referred to by its street name, Nemagon. Now, this nemagicide was all the rage with fruit companies because it was extremely effective at killing a microscopic worm that feeds on banana plant roots without damaging the plants. The problem is that it is directly tied to sterility and MID, miscarriages, stillbirths, birth defects, various types of cancer, depression, impotency, and the list goes on. The workers interviewed explained that direct exposure resulted from workers carrying the chemical in containers on their backs as they treated the banana plants. One worker reported that the chemical felt at first hot and stingy, then quickly went to cool and icy, and then, quote, it smelled awful and made us sleepy. Workers also commented on the environmental effects. Quote, all the frogs and toads were gone in the valley after we used the chemical. The fish would die in the rivers. Both the manufacturers of Nemagon and the U.S. government have been aware of its sterility and carcinogenic effects since the 1950s. Yet it wasn't until 1977 when workers at an Occidental plant noticed that they all were sterile that the true effects of Nemagon became painfully clear. Now, in the midst of the news storm that followed the discovery, Dow and Shell slowed down production of DBCP. Also, the EPA began the process of deregulating the toxin, making it illegal to use within the United States. Main competitors, Chiquita and Del Monte, stopped using the chemical in 1977. But Dole took the position of favoring its profits over the health and well-being of its workers. When Dole tried to back out of shipping Dole DBCP, Dole threatened to sue them for breach of contract. Mother Jones reporters Constance Mathiasen and David Weir spoke with Jack DeMint, who was at the time of the Nemagon scandal in charge of overseeing what chemicals were used on the Dole plantations abroad. In an internal memo dated August 6, 1977, DeMint made the decision to continue the use of DBCP until it was banned in the company's areas of operation. EPA findings be damned. Dole publicly used the chemical in various countries around the world until mid-1978. However, Mother Jones reported that another internal report existed that contained evidence that Dole was using Nemagon in its farm banana plantations as late as November 1980. Again, in 1988, 45 Dole workers were poisoned by DBCP substitute named Timic, a highly toxic known disruptor of the human immune system. In 2002, the Human Rights Watch uncovered abuses by Dole in Ecuador, a country that supplies Dole with one-third of all their bananas. The report contained evidence that children as young as 8 were working 12-hour days using sharp and dangerous equipment, frequently exposed to pesticides and subject to sexual harassment. Now, granted, similar abuses existed on other fruit company plantations. However, 70% of the children interviewed worked on a plantation that supplied Dole. In 2010, Dole was included on the scourge list of the International Labor Rights Forum as a company notorious for suppressing worker rights to organize. The company has been accused of making payment to a paramilitary group in Colombia known as the AUC. Statements given by AUC commanders attest to receiving this payment from Dole and other multinational corporations. A lawsuit that was subsequently dismissed alleged that Dole was the mastermind behind the murder of 51 men in a bid to take over their land. Early litigation cases against Dole were relatively successful. 1992, over 1,000 Costa Rican workers won a damage award of $20 million. In 1993, another class action suit against Dole, Chiquita, Del Monte, and Dow, and Shell, and Occidental, resulted in a $41 million settlement for workers from Costa Rica, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and the Philippines. Yet other cases have fallen short. Dole alleges fraud, and somehow verdicts are lessened and judgments are overturned. In a now infamous case, attorney Juan Dominguez filed suit in 2008 against both Dole and Dow Chemical. In a classic Dole move, the company sought to have the case dismissed on the grounds of fraud by Juan Dominguez and some of the plaintiffs. In 2009, relying on testimony from John Doe witnesses, Dole successfully won a motion for them to remain anonymous due to the concern for their safety. The judge, Victoria Cheney, dismissed the case. Another victory for Dole, but maybe just temporary. January 2010, the plaintiff's new attorney made a motion challenging the dismissal. It seems as if some of those Jane Doe's witnesses have come forward and publicly stated that their testimony was procured by Dole via bribery. And earlier this year, the Tellez case received another small victory. Juan Dominguez, the attorney whom Dole accused of participating in the fraud, was cleared of any wrongdoing by the State Bar of California. In conclusion, Swedish filmmaker Fredrik Gerton filmed a documentary about the Tellez case, and when a trailer was shown after the film's entry in the 2009 LA Film Festival competition, Dole flipped their wig. Dole didn't even wait until it had seen the movie to begin its campaign of harassment. Dole deployed their hired gun, the law firm Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher, and sent numerous cease and desist letters to individuals involved directly and indirectly with the film. Dole even went as far as to petition Judge Cheney, and the Swedish embassy to stop in and block the film. Soon after the film's limited release, Dole filed a slap suit. Then they got slapped in the face with a furious backlash from the Swedish community that climbed as high as the Swedish parliament. Soon a bipartisan petition was circulating in parliament that called upon Dole to dismiss its suit, which eventually did. And the anti-slap filed by Gerton and his crew was granted, and Dole was ordered to pay their attorney's fees. Dole's reaction to the film was telling. This is a company that doesn't want their machinations revealed to the American public. Those bananas on your kitchen counter come at a pretty steep price. The destruction of workers' lives and their environment. The only question left to be answered is whether or not this system is one in which we want to be an active participant. Hence, buy only certified organic bananas and make sure that Dole isn't one of the growers. Boycott them. I'm Gary Nall. And that's the first part of our program. And I'm going to give an in-depth analysis with direct documentation on how NASA documents reveal climate change caused by covert weather weapons. And that'll be in a moment. But when you look at all of our leaders today, in France, pathetic excuse, in Great Britain, a little lapdog, and the United States, a farce, all the major leaders, it's all about war, militarization, armaments, being tough, and invading, regime change. It's not an incursion, it's an invasion. So I thought you'd find this clip from long ago in a film by a very famous director, writer, and actor, to be of interest. If you know who the person is, let us know, 888-874-4888. Here's just about a 3-minute clip of a very famous speech in the movie that he's making, but I think it resonates very apropos to our own times.
Humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. For those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. The unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man. Not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. A decent world. That will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power, but they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Let's say hello to Steve from Phoenix. Hi, Steve in Phoenix. Oh, Steve just cut off. If anyone else knows the name of it, call us at 888-874-4888. And interesting because I wanted to speak with Steve because there is a major, major dust storm that's occurring out in Phoenix. It's one of the largest ever, and if not the largest ever. It's almost biblical. It's 3,000 feet high dust clouds, shrouded Phoenix, 30 miles wide blanket on Friday, 12,000 households without power, and flights grounded, heavy rain, strong winds following the dust storm. And I'm looking at a photograph of it now, and it looks like something out of a sci-fi film, out of the Mummy film. So that is the new reality. And you're going to see that more and more. Now, mind you, these dust storms carry massive amounts of sand, and that will destroy crops, and it'll rip buds off trees and destroy plants. And how are you going to be able to breathe in that environment? So that's the new reality of where we're living. Kevin from New York. Hi, Kevin. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin, what was the movie?
Oh, if it isn't The Dictator, then I don't know.
It is. It's The Great Dictator. Thank you, Kevin, for guessing that. All right.
Yeah, I'm a great believer in cycles of things repeating themselves, and this is definitely one of them.
Well, doesn't it show you that 70 years have gone by, 80 years have gone by? since that film, and it's still, he's still talking about something there that we should be talking about today, except the people getting up and saying that are, would be a Chris Hedges. And but we are not listening. We, the most Americans, but there's certainly a lot who are. I appreciate your call, Kevin. And if anyone else got it, it was Charlie Chaplin, a scene, the ending scene from The Great Dictator, and probably one of the most memorable speeches of any film. And I'm going to take a moment to, several moments, to give you an in-depth discussion on a topic. But I'm told that we have Aubrey in studio in New York City. Hi, Aubrey.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. What do you got for us?
Good. I have been running some analytics today, and I came across some rankings for PRN on our website that were really eye-opening and jaw-dropping numbers, showing us that globally, PRN is in the top 0.02% of websites, coming in at 134,071st in global rankings. That's out of 672 985,183 websites all
you
together.
Mean millions websites.
Yeah, millions. Hundreds of millions. And our rank is just going up, so hopefully we'll be able to break under 100,000 soon. So that's really exciting, and that just shines a lot of light on our millions, tens of millions of impressions and hundreds of thousands of users visiting our website and looking and seeking out
every
that.
Week.
Yes, looking out that progressive information.
Well, in the United States, out of, 80,000 websites?
Yes, out of 80 million
websites.
80
million websites.
We're in the top 50,000.
That's terrific. Well, that means we're in the top. There's 99.98 behind us. So people are reading, they're listening, they're sharing. And that's important. Thank you for sharing that with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
So at a time when so many people in non-commercial radio are dying, when the audiences are just decimated, it's nice to know that there's a place where you're having an enormous growth of positive input. So keep sharing that information with people. I want to share something with you now, because we should all be concerned about global warming. And it's unacceptable that the UN and the IPCC, Scientific Group on the Environment, continue to push CO2 as the cause of climate change, but refuse to acknowledge the military has been actively engaged in climate warming weapons technologies for more than 20 years. Now, a series of documents that I have from 1966 entitled Present and Future Plans of Federal Agencies in Weather Climate Modification reveals a network of government agencies in perpetual and secret collaboration with each other and the military to modify the global climate. It was created by the elitist National Academy of Sciences. Decades of interagency culture of secrecy explains why the issue of covert aerosol geoengineering is a taboo topic to be degraded to the status of conspiracy theory by a matrix of complicit bureaucrats at every opportunity. And this is why your local TV meteorologist will rarely make a helpful comment about an unusual sky filled with persistent jet trails. Another set of documents entitled The Evolution of a Weather Modification Research and Development Program into Military Weapon Systems appears as an anonymous draft intended as a critique of the U.S. weather modification program that the author characterizes as hijacked into a military weapon system. Jules Verne wrote about geoengineering the Earth's climate in 1889 in a sequel to From the Earth to the Moon called The Purpose of the North Pole. Verne writes that the Baltimore Gun Club purchased large tracts of the Arctic, then used the famous cannon from the Earth to the Moon to tilt the Earth's axis. Mind you, this was all just in his mind, but he was not that far off. In fact, Jules Verne could have been inspired by Harvard geologist Nathaniel Shaler, who proposed diverting warm Atlantic water into the Arctic back in 1877. That was a dozen years before Verne's fantastic story was published. Here's the reality. Arctic detonations of 88 atmospheric, 29 underground, and 3 underwater nuclear devices from 1955 to 1990, and that is not argued by anyone. Those are actual statistics from the government. Nuclear activities in the Arctic over the last 50 years. This is the conclusion present in a gripping set of articles entitled Vital Arctic Graphics. Now, numerous nuclear explosions have taken place in the Arctic. One of the largest military nuclear testing facilities is on the island Zemla, where from 1955 through 1990, the Soviet Union detonated 88 atmospheric and 29 underground, 3 underwater nuclear devices. Dozens of civilian peaceful nuclear explosions have also occurred in the Arctic, where nuclear bombs were used in the late 1980s for seismic studies and mining and in the attempts to extinguish oil-filled fires. In 2008, a year before low solar activity began to threaten 40 to 60 years of global cooling, the chemtrail warmists were confident they could achieve a big Arctic thaw for big oil. A carbon tax in the politics of the United Nations led to what we have experienced. From the World Watch Institute, March 2008, Arctic melting may lead to expanded oil drilling. Quote, more than half of the Arctic Ocean was covered in year-round ice in the mid-1980s. Today, the ice cap is much smaller. Alarming evidence of this warming trend was released last week when the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration released satellite evidence that perennial Arctic ice cover, as of February, rests on less than 30% of the ocean, end quote. Now, the rate of ice, sea ice loss were observed in much worse than even the most pessimistic projection led us to believe, says Carol Muffett, Deputy Campaigns Director of Greenpeace. For the first time in recorded history this past summer, the entire Northwest Passage between the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans was ice-free. Remember when people thought Arctic warming was a cool idea? Well, the prospects are there. Let me give you some specifics now about some of the things that they have done. If warming the Arctic was regarded as good for commerce for 100 years, why would a discovery that found carbon dioxide was already performing the task for free suddenly be regarded as a catastrophe to prevent? The British Petroleum disaster in the Gulf of Mexico demonstrated how big oil exists in a world of opportunistic pragmatism, no matter the risk to the environment. With an established record of corporate sociopathy, big oil would have little interest in what event would cause Arctic ice to retreat, as long as their long-held dream of no ice in the Arctic, and therefore they could go in and do what they wanted, put down oil wells, mine for minerals, but no one asked at what cost. This timeline of determined geoengineering projects suggests the goal of mediating Arctic climate remains a favored goal of the fossil fuel industry. And you can start in 1877 with Harvard geologist Nathaniel Scheer proposed channeling more of the warm Kuroshishi current through the Bering Straits to raise the temperature of the polar by 30 degrees. You have 1912, New York engineer and industrialist Carol Livingston Riker proposed building a 200-mile jetty off of Newfoundland to increase the Gulf Stream's flow into the Arctic Basin, with the added benefit that it would shift the axis of the planet Earth. The New York Times characterized the proposal as amazing but not insane. In 1929, Hermann Oberth, German-Hungarian physicist and engineer, proposed building giant mirrors on a space station to focus the sun's radiation on Earth's surface, making the far north habitable and freeing ice lanes to Siberian harbors. In 1945, Julian Huxley, biologist and Secretary General of UNESCO, proposed exploding atomic bombs at an appropriate height above the polar region to raise the temperature of the Arctic Ocean and warm the entire climate of the northern temperate zone. In 1946, a Village Voice ran an article reporting about geoengineering. In 1958, M. Gordosky, Soviet engineer, mathematician, and Soviet meteorologists proposed placing a ring of metallic potassium particles in the Earth's polar orbit to diffuse light reaching Earth and increase solar radiation to thaw the permanently frozen soil of Russia, Canada, and Alaska and melt polar ice. In 1958, Arkady Markin, Soviet engineer, proposed that the United States and Soviet Union build a gigantic dam across the Bering Strait and use nuclear power-driven propeller pumps to push the warm Pacific current into the Atlantic by way of an Arctic sea. Arctic ice would melt, and the Siberian and Northern American frozen areas would become temperate and productive. In 1958, Russian oil engineer P.M. Borzov proposed melting the Arctic and Greenland ice caps by spreading black coal dust on the ice, creating cloud cover across the poles to trap heat and divert warm Atlantic waters into the polar regions. The scheme was taken seriously by Soviet climatologists. Two conferences were held in Leningrad in the early 1960s following an initial meeting in Moscow by the Presidium of the USSR Academy of Sciences. In 1958, Atlantic Richfield geologist L.M. Natlin proposed exploding up to 100 underground nuclear bombs to mine the Alberta oil sands. Heat from the detonations was expected to boil the bitumen deposits, reducing their viscosity to the point that standard drilling operations could be used. The plan was encouraged by the United States' efforts to find peaceful uses for atomic energy. The project was approved in 1959, but the Canadian government reversed their decision in 1962 and declared that Canada was opposed to all forms of nuclear testing. In 2012, the Canadian tar sands are again an international concern, and today in 2014, they're pumping a lot of tar sands every day. In 1962, Harry Wexler was an MIT graduate and PhD in meteorology. Wexler had been researching the link connecting chlorine and bromide compounds to the destruction of stratospheric ozone layers, Wexler had already wanted to deliver this lecture that he never got a chance to do, The Climate and Earth and Its Modifications, University of Maryland Space Research and Technology Institute. And it remains largely unexplained why decades of optimism for warming the Arctic was suddenly replaced with a campaign of fear and doom for the consequences of warming the Arctic under the name of global warming. And then I've got reports from 1960s. In 1996, the Air Force documents that forecast, quote, owning the weather in 2025 would not rule out using TELSA and plasma technologies to increase Arctic temperatures in order to disadvantage a perceived enemy. A decision not to intervene might betray the military's primary objective of full-spectrum dominance. After all, access to oil and gas has been a national security priority for decades. In 1966, Dr. Gordon McDonnell was chairman of the ICAS, Select Panel on Weather and Climate Modification. He wrote, quote, carbon dioxide placed in the atmosphere since the start of the Industrial Revolution has produced an increase in the average temperature of the low atmosphere of a few tenths of a degree Fahrenheit. Unless peace comes, how to wreck the environment, end quote. And then you have more. I have report after report of documents how the military and federal agencies wanted to modify the global climate. In a series of documents entitled Present and Future Plans of Federal Agencies and Weather Climate Modification, it is revealed that a network of government agencies in secret collaboration, working with the military to geoengineer the climate, created an agenda and decades of this research, all in secret, has been going on. And each one of the years, 1966, each one of their panels, for example, they had a panel in 1966. One part of the panel is Panel on Weather and Climate Modification to Committee of Atmospheric Sciences, the National Security Agency, and the NRC, membership recommendations. Each one is talking about climate modification, weather modification. And yet, the world has not known of any of this. So in summary, and I will post all of these, they have all this geoengineering that they've been planning and doing for decades. And we know who was involved, what their goal was, and when they were implementing it. So the next time someone says, oh, those chemtrails, they don't mean anything, they're harmless, There is no real geoengineering of our weather. Yeah, there's a lot going on, and this is one of the things that we should be focused on. And if we had a Congress that was conscious, they would have committee hearings on this, and they would outlaw, ban immediately all government agencies and all private contractors from doing any more chemtrails or any more geoengineering. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. I want to thank you for taking your time to listen in today, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. But one quick thing before we go. I'm on the road, and I'll be on the road for another 4 weeks. When I come back, I'll be premiering a very important documentary on poverty. I don't have a chance to counsel a lot when I'm on the road. I do when I'm in the city. So I'm asking people not to call my office, because I'm putting in 20-hour days frequently, and I cannot, where I'm at, where I go, and how I get there, I just don't have the time. I will when I come back. In the interim, to help people, I have hired a group of individuals who are highly qualified to counsel, to give you direction, to help you with health and nutrition issues, and they can make a difference. And it's free. I do it as a public service. You pay nothing. John has a master's degree from University of Bridgeport in nutrition, public health. He is outstanding, and he has a lot of background. You can give him a call, Sandy on Sunday a call, Larry every night a call, and Celestina, who has a master's in science, University of Technology, Institute of Integrative Nutrition, every day a call. So I have a whole team to help you for free. You can call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, and they will make an appointment. You go in, you'll see them. No money, it's free. But please, I cannot help anyone till I return. I understand I get hundreds of requests, but I'm on the road. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to, standing by, Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from Gregory, and he said, Gary, the government uses Faraday cages to safeguard critical telecommunication systems from lightning and other electromagnetic interference. From what I'm reading, the Faraday cage is a simple and inexpensive shielding mechanism that even the average person can build to protect his or her own electronics. And he asks, would you address this as it may apply to protecting our national grid transformers from solar flares?
It is not impossible, but you would have to have a matching design. And we have specific ancient grids. And these power grids are main stations and substations. And we would need about in the neighborhood of about $1 billion, not a lot of money when you consider what's at risk, to safeguard all of our grids so that they would not be susceptible, as they are now, to a solar storm. And but the power utility companies don't want to put out any money. It passed the House of Representatives unanimously and was killed in the Senate. So that whole story about what technology we need and how much it would cost, including what you just mentioned, which is feasible, is not going to pass at this time unless there's a national outcry. The likelihood is you'd have to have a smaller solar storm that would knock out electricity in some area of the United States for maybe 2 or 3 days, and then it would get everyone's attention, and then it would freak people out. Then they would demand that something be done, and then those people in the Senate who are totally compromised financially by the special interest group would have no choice but to pass it, and the utility companies would have no choice except to make the changes. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Luann. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thank you.
Well, we're talking about two issues today. Boko Haram in Nigeria appears to be largely undeterred in its terror campaign. And we'll be talking about how the media aided and abetted genocide by Israel in Gaza.
Okay. By the way, do you imagine what would happen if we actually had an American reporter who had the courage to show the real scenes, to show the real carnage, and it was not an incursion, it was an invasion, and whole blocks completely decimated,
mm-hmm.
and 93% of all the deaths now it's about 1,200 deaths, are civilians. If people actually saw the truth, would it change their mind? Because we're keeping the truth from the people. But if you go to the BBC, you go to Al Jazeera, you go to Le Monde, you go to all these other sources, you see the truth. In American media, you see no truth. We look forward
to it. All that's on our menu today.
We look forward to it. Eutrice Lead, in a moment. Please stay with us.